Welcome to the No Illusions podcast for November 2nd, 2010. Your name is Christine Dunaway.
That's right. Chrissy D. And your name? What the hell?
Trying to do a two Ronnies, and you don't even know who the two Ronnies are. Hey, DWW84, welcome in. Welcome to the show. Your first time, I think.
I think I know you on Twitter.
Yeah, you've met DWW at one and only beat tub that I think we ever went to. Can you hear us okay? Just let us know. I'm using the Ustream Producer app for the first time, and as you can tell, I had a few problems. Those of you who aren't listening live, we got a bit of feedback, but it looks like it's working. So just let me know in the chat room there if you can hear us, folks. If no one responds, then I'll assume you can't hear us, and I'm just going to light up my cigar while I wait for you.
What if my hair catches on fire?
Sounds good, he says.
Oh, okay.
Good. Well, how you doing, Chrissy D?
Doing well, doing well.
You had a good week?
Yeah.
We're running out of gas.
I had a really good week. Tell everyone where we ate tonight.
Where?
Yeah.
In our kitchen?
No.
In our dining room?
In Chrissy's bitchin' burrito kitchen. That's where.
Yes. Chrissy made some awesome burritos tonight. As always, our cigars are provided by, where are we? Perdomo. This is Perdomo Patriarch.
We smoked a few on the beach this past weekend.
That's right. So I'm going to let you start tonight.
Okay.
I asked Chrissy to prepare some notes, and which she has done. So
okay.
Why don't you start, Chrissy? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I just read this morning in Silence Daily on one of my feeds that alcohol is the most harmful drug according to a multi-criteria analysis. So I just thought that was interesting in light of kind of what all California residents, voters, will be voting on tomorrow of their time, November 2nd, and that's Prop 19.
Today their time, I think.
Yeah, it's in the wee hours of the morning,
yeah.
But yeah, today their time. Prop 19 to make pot legal.
Is it to legalize it or just decriminalize it?
Decriminalize it, sorry.
To decriminalize it? And do you understand the difference between the two?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are just more regulations. Like, I mean, I've been to Amsterdam a few times, and it's decriminalized there, too, contrary
right.
to popular belief. They're just, I mean, the cops basically turn a blind eye, but under a set of circumstances, and there are certain restrictions, like how many... I think, as I remember in Amsterdam, how many, how the quantity of marijuana that you can buy in one establishment, in one sitting, and there are, you know, certain places where you can smoke and other places where you can't. And
as we all know from Pulp Fiction, it's legal to buy it, it's legal to carry it, it's not legal to sell it.
Right.
But the cops can't stop you.
But this is supposed to be...
Charles.
This is supposed to be helping the California economy, and that's...
Well, hold on. This is going to be my question. So if they're just decriminalizing it, can California government actually tax it? Wouldn't they have to legalize it in order to tax
what?
It?
You know what? Honestly, I have not... I have not... read too much about it.
Well, before you get onto that bit, why don't you talk about some of the stats in that article? Because I haven't read
yeah.
it, but you were telling me about it a bit earlier. Something about the hard numbers that they've put to it and compared
yeah.
it to some hard drugs.
Yes, so this was a pretty major study that was conducted, and it is including tobacco. Drugs including alcohol and tobacco products are a major cause of harms to individuals in society, it says. And basically they rated, they had drugs were scored on a scale of 0 to 100, 0 being no harm at all, and 100 being the worst possible harm. There were 9 criteria of harm to the individual, 9 different criteria, including, you know, is it addictive, in this and this and this, physical, psychological, and social harms. And there were 7 different criteria that they rated that was harm to others.
Right.
And let me just scroll down here. So basically, when everything averaged out, the most harmful drug was alcohol at a score of 72. Heroin was next at 55. So huge difference there.
72 to 55.
Yeah, of overall harm. And crack, 54. It says heroin, crack, and crystal meth were the most harmful drugs to the individual, whereas alcohol, heroin, and crack were the most harmful to others.
So alcohol is that much more dangerous to society than crystal meth or crack. Now, from what you've read, does that mean that it is at the moment, but like only because more people drink alcohol, or is it a measure that weighs the independent danger of each drug independent of how embedded is it is it already? I can't even talk tonight. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. No, this is,
as I say, how dangerous it is right now.
No, this is just each drug in a vacuum.
So if each drug was given equal access in society,
yes,
they would still have these equivalent levels of danger.
Yes.
So I wonder how that works. How does crystal meth not be as, and crack not be as dangerous, significantly less dangerous than alcohol? Did you work that out?
Well, it does say the most harmful drug, heroin, crack, and crystal meth were the most harmful drugs to the individual, whereas alcohol, heroin, and crack were the most harmful to others.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, you always hear about these crazy crack addicts going on while, you know, and I've heard from people who work in the sort of drug rehabilitation industry that people on ice, crystal meth, are incredibly violent and difficult to manage. But you tend to see people, at least, you know, on television and movies, on The Wire, which is my only source of reference, just getting high and, you know, passing out in their room, or on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
They just get high and pass out. I think where the violence comes in is when they go out trying to rob people to get money to get another score.
You know what? You're right. I don't want to read the whole article. It's quite long. But it is... I think even the... Marijuana has a score of, tobacco has a score of 26.
Right. Cocaine is 27.
Yeah.
So cocaine and tobacco, and speed is 23. Cannabis, 20.
There you go. Cannabis is 20.
Wow. Ecstasy, 9.
Butane, 10.
Ecstasy is down with anabolic steroids.
And mushrooms is the lowest. It's 5. Because all you see are, like, leprechauns and fairies.
And according to the Bill Hicks documentary we were watching last night, you just come out of it believing that the universe is one, that we're all one being manifesting in different appearances, and the universe is love.
I think I just need to take mushrooms, and then I don't have to, like, do years of Advaita study or whatnot.
Yep.
Just one time with magic mushrooms and all of a sudden the light is like beaming down on me.
You know, it a lot of people think that actually quite seriously. I mean, that's the whole Huxley's doors of perception that, you know, the 60s were all about. But what tends to happen from the reading that I've done it is people who do LSD or mushrooms sometimes do get that their sense of identity disappears long enough for them to get a sense of the oneness of all things. But as soon as they come off the drug, even though they might remember that feeling isn't present in them. And what, you know, enlightenment's supposed to be all about is having that all the time without the need to get fucked up in order to have it. You know?
Right. Well, I just thought it was, I mean, where is society going with this? Because I really believe that marijuana should be legalized. And I like you. I mean,
you like me.
I like you.
Oh, comma.
Yeah, comma. tend to think that all drugs should be legalized and monitored.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly believe that. And, you know, getting back to California, there's going to be perhaps a big opportunity for us to have legalized marijuana in a major Western population now to see what happens.
Yeah, and I just think back to eras of history, like in America's history and prohibition, the more damage than anything that did, and the relationship of Americans to alcohol and the kind of dysfunction that bred there. And of course, prohibition was taken out of effect. And I don't know, I feel like we're kind of at one of those cruxes where we have to realize that marijuana is not nearly as harmful as alcohol.
And neither is ecstasy, according to this.
And in fact, marijuana can have medicinal properties and help people who are in pain or have, I don't know, it helps me.
And cigars are the peace pipe.
Yeah, that's right.
So I guess here's a question stemming from this research, and we'll put the show notes there, so you'll have to give it to me because I want to read it too.
Yeah.
We'll put this up on the No Illusions blog. But if alcohol is that much more dangerous than the rest of these drugs, does it mean that we should make all of these drugs as legal and regulated as alcohol is? Or does it mean that we should criminalize alcohol if it's that dangerous and get it down to, remove it out of society so it can't be that dangerous? What's your feeling on that?
Well, my feeling is it will never work. Just as it didn't in prohibition.
And it hasn't worked in the drug war for the last 30 years. There's more drugs now, more people taking drugs now than ever before. The drug war is a scam, right?
Speaking of drugs, too, I heard that the fifth biggest heroin bust happened today in Melbourne.
Yeah, I heard it yesterday on the news. It was It was an uncut value of $60 million and a street value of $500 million once it had been cut.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I think that people are going to use and abuse drugs regardless. We just got through the whole series of The Wire and saw how the negative effects that it has trickling down when it's not legalized, and it just creates all sorts of problems on all sorts of levels. And if it were legalized and users could be given a safe place to purchase and use the drugs, I think that it really would help. And in fact, in one of the seasons of The Wire, Bonnie Colvin tried to do that in a way. I mean,
we've got a killer possum stalking us. Hey, Jay-Z, welcome, man. He says, interesting, emerging evidence suggests that hallucinogens are pretty effective in treating addiction and depression. Check dosenation.com, dosenation.com. By the way, I've got links turned on tonight too, so links should work in the chat room. There are no drugs, no sex in the green room. The links work in the chat room. You know that Chris Rock thing? Anyway.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hallucinogens, huh? Jason and I, Jason is my partner at Suave and Podomo. We've been talking a lot recently about the nanny state that Australia is moving towards, where increasing your successive governments just want to protect us from ourselves and tell us, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. Tobacco, obviously, being one of the big ones that we're directly interested in at the moment because of our cigar business. And, I'm thinking seriously about starting a campaign, like a social media campaign around saying no to the nanny state.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting subject. Obviously, if we take cigarettes, the cigarette industry, Philip Morris, etc., British American Tobacco, lied through their teeth for decades about the dangers of cigarettes, which they fully knew, and they lied. So we don't want that as a scenario. We don't want people, using any product, believing it to be safe, when the manufacturers and the retailers of the product absolutely know that it's not.
Sure.
So the government has a role to play in making sure that people are educated. And
they do that by slapping nasty stickers all over
every
cigar carton.
Yeah, and
cigarette carton, sorry.
We want them to make sure people are educated. We want to make sure that we have regulation in place so children can't access these products, etc. But when they try and stop adults from consuming this stuff, you have to be very careful about that. And the government uses the sort of the health lobby uses the health costs, the economic costs. And we listened to this on This American Life the other day. You were listening to a show about how the tobacco industry in the US, it was in Russia somewhere, one of the Slavic countries a few years ago, did a survey or did some research and actually said, well, economically, having your people smoking cigarettes is good for the country economically because they die younger, and so you don't need to pay pensions, and you don't have to pay for their health care because they actually die. And then
they're basically saying it's a wash.
What do you mean?
Either way, I mean the pros and cons.
Well, they said it was about even, right?
Yeah, it was a wash.
Is that what you call it, a wash? It was a wash.
You haven't heard that?
No.
The things I have to teach you.
I'm very concerned about a society where the government starts to interfere with our ability to read, watch, and listen to what we want to, which is the whole internet filtering thing that the current government's trying to put into place. And then the ability to smoke or drink or inhale or inject what we want to, as long as we're not hurting somebody else and interfering with their right to live their life as they choose, we should be free in a free society to consume these products. And if there is a legitimate economic cost to society as a whole for people doing this stuff, then we work out, economic ways of getting people to pay for their own health care. You don't get Medicare if you're a smoker. If you smoke cigarettes, you don't get Medicare, or you get reduced Medicare, or whatever it is, or you pay an extra 1% on your taxes.
Right, something that will benefit the society at large, everybody, whether you use or not. And I mean, that's happening. I mean, there are pretty hefty taxes on these products anyway.
Insane. I mean, I know with cigars, the taxes are insane. It's like 300% taxes. You're taking the duties and the customs and the various taxes that we pay to bring cigars into the country, it's like 300%.
But seriously, there's a big alcohol problem in both of our countries. And I think particularly in Australia, I think it's a little more rampant somehow. I always hear about it, and it seems like Aussies have this kind of really unhealthy relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, and alcohol is one of those drugs where you don't just hurt yourself. When you get drunk, you tend to get, a lot of people tend to become violent,
Yeah.
and or they crash their
Well, I was
car.
about to just say, like, when are people going to wake up and say, okay, there's a problem here. There are bar fights all the time, acts of violence, DUIs, people getting killed on the road, this and that. When was the last time that anybody got killed because somebody got stoned? When anybody got in a fight because they're stoned? When you're stoned, you're like so peaceful.
Exactly, yeah.
And anybody dying because they're smoking too much pot. Never happened.
There's no medical evidence to back that up, you're right. And that's more and more that story started to come out in the last few years. A lot of, I think we've talked about this on the show before, like a lot of very, very senior government health people. I think it was the guy who was the head of health in the UK a year or two ago came out and said, there's just no evidence whatsoever.
I'm also thinking, I'm sorry if you're gonna like change the subject, but I'm also thinking about there's a major problem in the US in the Greek system. Do you know what I mean by the Greek system?
When girls save their virginity by taking it up the ass.
Well, that's one Greek system.
Oh, there's another Greek system?
it's all the fraternities and sororities at
Oh, you call that the
universities.
Greek system?
Yeah,
Oh, right.
because it's always like Alpha Phi is one fraternity and Sigma Chi, and they're all
Wank,
somehow.
wanker, wanker, wanker.
Yeah, seriously. And
What's that got to do with?
there's a serious problem of people dying because of binging, and like there's a huge binge drinking problem in the US across university campuses.
Frat party kind of stuff,
Yeah,
right?
but it's just, it's,
Animal House.
yeah, but it's terrible. It's like just binging, people dying. I remember when I was at University of Washington, like 3 people fell off a balcony on like the 10th floor of a dorm building, and like just, I remember lots of different things happening just at my university, and of course you hear about them nationwide, but when you don't hear about people getting stoned and shit like that happening, I don't know. I think it's just completely ridiculous, and people have to take this kind of hard evidence seriously.
And there's lots of interesting theories on why marijuana has been, villainized over the last 70 odd years. I read a book a few years ago, talked about it, and said that it started to be villainized in the sort of the jazz era, the early jazz era, because hashish was starting to get imported in from Mexico, and it was an alternative to cotton. And all the cotton farmers, cotton was like the number one crop in the US at the time, and they saw it as a threat, so they lobbied the government to make it illegal to grow hashish.
That's true. Because hashish has so many useful raw, what do you call it, byproducts.
Yeah. And then another theory is that, people who smoke dope tend to become very peaceful and blissed out and feel love. And, the government doesn't want people to be that way. They want them to be scared.
In
They
fear,
want them to
yep.
be,
Although I think sometimes you can get paranoid smoking pot. I think that's more like a speed or meth type thing, paranoia. Pot is just pretty mellow. The worst thing that can happen is you get the munchies.
And you laugh, and you go, "Oh, look at the little world they're playing together. That's so. Oh, what's he doing? Oh no!" In joke there. Well, then,
Involving a nature show.
seeing as we're talking about the government, you and I were talking while we were at the beach on the weekend about immigration in
Yeah.
Australia, and how everyone's talking about. Got to stop the boat people. We watched John Howard on Q&A last week and
Shocking.
defending the stuff that he did with the quote unquote boat people. And we just got to stop calling them boat people. I mean, it's just such a derogatory
It
term.
is.
They have to be referred to as asylum seekers or just
refugees.
You know, refugees, yeah. That's the thing, though. They don't get called refugees because that has a strong sort of heart pull to it. But creating words like boat people or asylum seekers, you know, they're seeking asylum rather than they're running from, you know, some terrible political or religious oppression.
Or they're not even, I don't know, boat people doesn't even make them sound human.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like rats on boats or something.
They're like the tree people. And, you know, I was saying to you on the weekend that I think we need two queue jumpers, yeah, as Jay-Z says. People who need a place to live, exactly. And I was saying to Chrissy on the weekend, I would love to see I covered up the camera so you don't look at it all the time.
I like to look at it.
I know you do. You're not supposed to. people should be talking about the opportunity that these people represent to a country and not the danger or the threat or this. The whole attitude from both sides of the political spectrum is, well, we need to stop it, or we need to slow it down, or we need to, it's like it's a negative thing, as opposed to, okay, you've got these people that want to come to our country so badly they're willing to risk their lives and every dollar that they've got. Exactly. How do we turn that to an opportunity? Which is, you know, I think a general rule in life is every thing that happens to you have to say, okay, how do I turn this to my advantage? How do I turn this into an opportunity? And I think politically we need to look at things like refugees wanting to come to our country as an opportunity. How do we use their energy, their passion, their skills, their knowledge, their diverse backgrounds to our advantage as a country?
Well, and I was telling you that people who, you know, jump the border, smuggle over the border, I guess, or jump the border from Mexico into the U.S., what happens to them if they get over is they find work wherever they can, most typically as migrant workers on farms doing the real dirty and hard work that established Americans would never do. And Americans benefit as a result because...
Well, they wouldn't do it for that price anyway.
That's right. I mean, I think that they should get fair wages, but, I mean, they're illegal, they're doing something. And as a result, Americans can buy produce at an affordable price. Or I guess farmers can get more rich, I don't know.
Are they being exploited, though, those people?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just saying, but, like, they're being useful and people are benefiting. So I think governments can realize the potential of these people who gave up so much. And, you know, the things that, the value that they can add to society, they can come over here, be processed in a reasonable manner and a timely manner, I think. And they can choose from an array of jobs that that can help benefit society, Australian society, and put them to work, give them stipulations. They don't get Medicare until for X amount of time, you know, or...
Although those people are probably going to need healthcare. They're probably going to need assistance to get set up, etc. But, you know, you know, some of the hardest working people I've ever known in Australia are people who are first or second immigrants out of Asia or Sri Lanka or India or Pakistan.
You know, I was thinking about Muhammad today, actually.
Muhammad,
like,
yeah,
what he did, what he's done and what he went through in order for his family to be allowed into Australia is incredible.
Yeah, he's the guy who sells our local kebabs, runs our local kebab store.
And he's great and it's yummy.
And, you know, America, you know, as we know, was built really on the back of slavery, but it also, in the late 19th and early 20th century, had lots of immigrants come to the country, and so did Australia. I mean, post-World War II in Melbourne had massive amounts of Italian and Greek immigrants come in, which made Melbourne the great city it is today. That rich cultural diversity that came in turned Melbourne from being a stuffy British colonial city in the early 20th century to this vibrant, multicultural place that everyone loves about Melbourne, the coffee and the food and the different little, you know, suburbs that have like Little Italy and Little Greece and
Same
Little
with
Vietnam,
like New York and San Francisco.
Exactly.
And I think at the root of all this fear of immigrants and all this backlash is, at the root of it is xenophobia and racism.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it also benefits governments at the moment to create sort of that distraction and fear in people. You know, it's a bit like ecstasy and you know, crack. It's easy to write big emotional news stories about that kind of stuff that can distract people from the reality of what's going on. John Stewart's Rally to Restore Sanity and or Fear. We watched his big closing speech, and that analogy that he gave, he said, like, the media can use their magnifying glass to really focus on an issue and bring light to an understanding of issues we don't have, or it can use its magnifying glass to set ants on fire and then do a week's worth of stories about spontaneous combusting ants. You know, and I think the whole refugee situation is just another one of those things that it's an easy story for the media and the government to beat up. You know, it gets people very divided. People get very sort of emotional about it, as we are. It's just an easy way to distract people from what's really going on.
And it's just so, I think the media has been completely inconsiderate about the highlighting the situations that these people left. I mean, that's what we don't know. Like, the highlighting that these people are in dire situations.
Yeah, how about telling some of the stories of these people, where they've come from, and building empathy in the minds of Australians for these people's stories.
But instead, they just put them under the boat people umbrella. Hmm. They don't even, I mean, that's all we know about them. They're boat people.
They're boat people. And you know, they riot. Whenever there's any sort of unrest in the prisons that we call detention centres, but they're prisons, we hear about the riots and all this news about the riots. We don't hear their stories. They're not humanised. They're basically, like we do with Aboriginals in this country, we basically just push them into remote parts of the country where we don't have to see them, and we don't talk about them unless they're causing trouble.
Try to forget them.
Yeah, unless they're causing trouble, and then the media's all over it. If there's any child molestation or petrol sniffing in the Indigenous communities, it's all over the media. But that's the only time you ever hear about it. Is when you hear about them if they win something in football or the Olympics.
And in beautiful commercials about Australia.
Yeah,
and then it's like they're painted as these, you know, the beautiful natives, which they are, but it's kind of... The beautiful ads, it's like, welcome to Australia, where Aboriginals are peacefully roaming around, and I don't know.
I'd like to shoot like a making of one of those tourism ads where you have the little Aboriginal kid waving and smiling, and then they go, all right, cut, and they put him back in his little prison and, you know, send him back to the slum that he was growing up on.
Right.
The Northern Territory.
And hey, Jay-Z, do you say, see, I think it's cool to say NZ Jay-Z, but I'm sure you say NZ Jay-Z, but you know what? That just doesn't flow.
Walkabout, DWW says Walkabout, which I think he's talking about the film.
Yeah. No, it's that beautiful commercial. Come Walkabout. You sent it to me when I was in Seattle.
Oh, the tourism ads.
And it's
yeah,
the woman like escapes from her corporate thing, probably
her husband
or something, comes. Like,
and the little Aboriginal kid goes, come on, come
out. That's beautiful. I think you cried when you sent it to me.
I did. I got very emotional about it because it was beautiful.
Because you're going to take me.
Yeah, I want you to come walk about on my cock. just going to drop that in. Yeah, that's right. Our friend Buzz Brugman, you know, Buzz in Seattle. For years, Buzz has been saying to me, I'm going to come to Australia. I'm going to go walk about. I'm like, really? No one says that.
I'd never heard that until I saw that commercial. But I think I've, like, now that it's in my consciousness, I've heard.
Do you know what walkabout is?
Just like take a walk.
No. It's and Aboriginals were nomadic tribes, and they would just go and walk from one part of the country to another part of the country, and just that's how they lived. They didn't stay. They would stay in one place until they sort of ate all the berries and ate all the lizards, and then they would just, like a nomadic tribe, they were hunters and gatherers, right? So walkabout was sort of this tradition of Aboriginals just going and, you know, it's a
So it's
strange thing,
really
just.
traveling, kind of.
Well, yeah, but it's developed more of a thing about just walk out into the outback and just walk without any sort of destination in mind or any kind of itinerary. You just go and you just walk and see what happens to you.
Yeah. So
Long
if I
distances.
was like, I'm going walkabout, bye.
You'd be gone for 6 months.
You'd be like, oh shit, she's gone nutters, or something, or like she's going to go in the outback and.
Kill tourists and eat them, eat their charred remains.
Play violin for them.
Oh, all that, yeah.
Yeah. Z it is, no Zed. Ow! Yeah, I like Z. I struggle with Zed, and I have to spell things to people sometimes. Like I was saying to this Apple girl who called me today that my MacBook serial numbers, and I was like, RH Zed.
Except, you know, I grew up, my generation grew up watching Sesame Street, so it was all about the Z in Sesame Street,
Z,
so.
that's why it's Jay-Z, yo.
Yeah, NZJZ.
Yay, good.
So, what else you got to talk about? What's on your list?
That was basically it, because I only did half my homework. Because you said come up with two stories, and
You
instead I was
failed.
cleaning the pantry and mopping the floors and getting my teeth fixed.
Well, I wanted to talk about Randy Quaid. No, her MacBook's fine. It's just got a little bit of cracking on the base.
And my MacBook's the good MacBook. My MacBook's the not the evil one that cures. I've had mine for nearly 3 years. I've had like one minor problem. Been gorgeous. It's just like a little champ.
I think the engineering on those is a bit more robust than the 17 inches because you've got the 13.
Yeah.
The baby Max and the 17s are just, you know, dodgy.
But this is actually a funny story because I don't remember those of you who were watching last week. I went and got a power cord for Cameron. He plugged it in. He said, "Nah, this isn't working." I was like, "What? Okay." And I thought that my MacBook had died. It had been plugged in. The light on the charger, the cord, was green, and my MacBook just died. And then after the show, we realized, what if your MacBook's just out of batteries?
This one's not charging now
This
as
is
we
probably
speak.
the,
Same
I
chip,
think,
same code, yeah.
yeah. Anyway, they're
It's still
replacing
not
it.
showing.
Apple is, but they had to order a new
Yeah.
part.
I realized her, it was just
So
battery was flat.
it was the charger that was out, and so I just put it into another charger, and boom, she woke up.
So, Randy Quaid.
Oh, I've got the model before the unibody one, and unfortunately, I can't change the hard HDD on that model without
Says
40.
DWW. Yeah. Randy Quaid, American actor, most people probably remember from the National Lampoon movies with Chevy
Yeah.
Chase. He's done a lot of stuff, though.
He was Uncle, what was his name in Christmas Vacation? He was so great.
Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, there's been some stories in the press over the last week or so about him and his wife being arrested. That they owed money to some hotel, that they hadn't paid the bill, and that they were living in someone in the guest house of a property that they used to own without permission or something. They were being made out to be nutters, right?
And seriously, if you're going to make anyone out to be nutters, Randy Quaid would be good because he just looks like a nutter. And
Yes.
he plays a nutter in most of the stuff. So, I mean, that's a really good target.
Well, easy to look like another. What I'm going to try and do is see if I can play this video clip. I don't know if this is going to work, but bear with me, guys who are watching live. I'm going to see if I can make some magic happen with
How can
this
we tell
Ustream
who
thing.
is watching when?
A video shot, will that work? No. IRL, but yeah. Yeah.
We could watch Eastbound and Down. That would be good.
Screencast? Does that work? Nah. All right. I'll just put the link in the notes and you guys can watch this at your own leisure. I'll just put in the show notes later. Anyway. Actually, no, I'll play it. I'm going to play it and see if the microphone will pick it up. That's a good idea. Yeah. I want you to listen to Randy Quaid's press conference that he did a couple of days ago in Canada.
Vancouver.
We believe there are to be a malignant tumor of star whackers in Hollywood. How many people do you know personally who have died suddenly and mysteriously in the past 5 years? I have personally known 8 actors, all of whom... All of whom I have worked with and was close to. Heath Ledger, Chris Penn, David Carradine, and all. I believe these actors were whacked, and I believe that many others, such as Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, and Mel Gibson, are being played to get at their money. In the meantime, many a celebrity's image and marketability is being co-opted and destroyed. Google helps out by keeping the negative stories near the top of the celebrity's webpage because it's the negativity that brings in the advertising revenue. In my own case, my ex-attorney Lloyd Braun has joined this tribe of bottom feeders by creating his own celebrity gossip website. What is wrong with that picture? When your own attorney starts defaming you, who do you turn to defend you? Lloyd Braun also claims to have come up with the idea of the Sopranos, so he's obviously familiar with the ways and means of organized crime. Unfortunately, my brother Dennis has made matters worse by buying a house from Mr. Braun on property Braun originally bought with money he embezzled from me. I recently discovered, much to my surprise, that Dennis is also on the deed to my Santa Barbara property. This is also the work of Mr. Braun, further confounding the validity of the transfer of my fully furnished property in 1992 to Mr. Bruce Berman. I have earned approximately $40 million throughout my career. I have profit participation in some of my films. I am being embezzled from by this monstrous ring of accountants, estate planners, and lawyers who are mercilessly slandering me and trying to kill my career, and I believe murder me in order to gain control of my royalties.
All right, we'll pause it there. But could you guys hear that all right in the live part of it? Let us know. But anyway, just to recap, Dennis Quaid is giving this press conference basically saying that there's a gang of lawyers and producers and accountants in Hollywood that are basically trying to destroy the reputations of a group of stars and kill them. Hold on, let me turn my microphone back on the front speakers. To kill them and kill them to steal all of their money. And as you can probably hear, and you saw it, I mean, he doesn't look insane, he doesn't look crazy, he's very, very composed and...
He did start choking up a tiny bit before.
Oh, he was talking about friends that had died, like Heath Ledger, etc., or actors that he knew. Chris Penn, Heath Ledger...
We were just talking about Heath Ledger recently too, and the mysteriousness of his death.
Yeah, I remember when Michael Hutchence died under bizarre circumstances. I've always believed that he was probably whacked, and he died the same way as David Carradine, supposedly bizarre auto asphyxiation, which no one can understand. I mean, okay, fair enough if people are doing weird things to get their jollies. But
that's also an easy way to stage something, as we saw on The Wire. D'Angelo was staged that way.
Everything comes back to The Wire.
It does, really. Yeah. And The Sopranos.
And Lloyd Braun with David Chase created The Sopranos. So, yeah, it's really fascinating to hear, he's not an A-list star, but he's been around for a long time, very well known, been in lots of movies. Very well-known actor. But it led me to this other thing called Gang Stalking World, I'll post the links up to both of these in the show notes. I'm just going to bring up this site. I want to read it to you. Welcome to Gang Stalking World. Gang stalking is a systemic form of control which seeks to destroy every aspect of a target individual's life. Using occupational health and safety laws, warning markers can be added to a target's file. Once a target is flagged, a notification is sent out, and the target is followed around 24/7 by the various communities that they are in. A covert investigation might be opened, and electronic means used by the civilian spies as part of the covert monitoring and surveillance process. The citizen informants can be parts of these community-oriented programs, but are often just average citizens. Everyone in the target's life is contacted, advised as to why the individual has been listed or flagged, advised not to discuss the notification, and asked to be a part of the ongoing, never-ending monitoring, and in brackets, systemic harassment process. This process is covertly designed to destroy the target over time, leaving them with no form of support. And there's a bunch of stories in here about people they believe are being gang stalked, like testimonials of people who believe they've been gang stalked, systematically had their reputation destroyed for no apparent reason, their credit lines destroyed, their friends and family being told that these people are dangerous. Everyone steers clear of them, so they have no personal support network. Interesting stuff. What do you think? Crazy conspiracy theory or possible?
I don't know, but when we were discussing our homework assignments for the show over burrito, bitchin' burritos, I was kind of like, I think each one of our shows we're getting more and more into conspiracy theory, and you're a conspiracy theorist, definitely.
I don't think I am, but here's how I would phrase it. I believe that the version of the truth that we're given by corporate media and the government in Western countries has been proven to be false and lies many, many, many times.
It's not to be trusted.
And it's in their interests quite often to lie to the general population. So my basic assumption is that we are being lied to by the media and by the government a large percentage of the time.
Yeah.
Not necessarily all of the time, of course, but a large percentage of the time, where it suits them, we're being lied to. So therefore, if they're lying to us about stuff, there is another truth out there. But conspiracy theories are where you think that there's a cabal of conspirators that are trying to take over the world. I think that there are people acting in their own interests that run counter to the interests of the proletariat quite often. But where I differ from most conspiracy theorists that I have heard or spoken to is that I also believe that we need to try and find hard evidence to support conspiracy theories. It's kind of like the whole, you know, religion thing.
Yeah.
If you can't find evidence, then it's just another idea. We need to try and find evidence for this stuff.
There's no reason to believe in it without evidence. I mean, there's reason. I think it's in things like this. It really makes sense to me, this Randy Quaid thing.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
These people, these Hollywood stars have got a lot of money, and a lot of people don't believe they deserve to have that amount. I mean, you know, why should a Michael Hutchins be worth $100 million? Why should a Heath Ledger be worth $100 million? A lot of people who are working their asses off look at them and go, well...
I don't think the people who... Okay, say this is really happening. I don't think the people who are setting them up... I don't think they're like... They don't deserve it, therefore we're going to take that away from them. I think they're just...
Greedy.
I mean, this lawyer dude, whatever his name was, he's got to have buco bucks already. I mean, he's a Hollywood lawyer. He
one of the creators of The Sopranos. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think these people are just like complete
greedy
assholes.
Yeah. Well, it's just really interesting to see Randy Quaid come out and say this. It's not on a conspiracy theory website. It's Randy Quaid coming out and saying, I'm being systematically destroyed by a bunch of people trying to steal my money. And anyway, fascinating stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Jay-Z says, The Wire, how good is Omar? Did you notice he never swears or kills people on a Sunday? Yeah, we were huge fans of Omar.
He doesn't swear on a Sunday?
No, he doesn't swear at all. You know, anyone who swears, any of his crew that swears around him, he criticizes them about their language because he's a gentleman. He's the perfect gentleman.
I love Omar.
He'll kill you if you get in his way, but, you know, he's a perfect... But he only kills people in the game. Never kills an innocent. Only kills people in the game. We did love Omar. You were so devastated when Omar got whacked.
I really, like, my one and only hope, really, if I had to choose one, towards the end of The Wire is that Omar survived. I wanted Omar to survive, and then it was like that.
Well, they're keeping it real, yo.
He had the best delivery ever. I mean...
he was the bomb.
What was one of his lines?
It's just all in the game. I know.
I do what I do.
Yeah, you know how I do. Jay-Z was mentioned the Yemeni bomb scare, and it is on my list of things to talk about tonight. Probably wrap up with this, I guess. I'm sure you've all heard of the Yemeni UPS bomb scare thing. I mentioned on Twitter the other day when it first broke out that it seemed remarkably close to the midterm elections in the US. And of course, you know, we heard a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of media coverage when it first happened. And then they mentioned that they'd arrested this woman. And then a quieter story a couple of days later was that she'd actually been released without any charges. They believed that her identity was stolen. I think her telephone number and her license or her credit card was left with the bomb or something. So, you know, her lawyer from the get-go said, this isn't right. And everyone who knew her said, she was quiet. I think she was like a university student or something. Had no political or religious affiliations that anyone knew of. So she's obviously being set up. And the question is, by who? And as our friend Ian Kath said on Twitter shortly afterwards, the first thing he thinks of when he sees these stories now is a false flag operation. And I think it's a good place to start. And again, not because it's a conspiracy theory, but because there is so much evidence going back over the last... My mobile's ringing. 10 to 9. Wonder why. There's so... No, I'll check.
Well,
probably the kids. You talk.
So... he's saying there's so much evidence about something. He was Shakespearean. Who was Shakespearean? Jay-Z? I think our chat line... Omar! Oh! He really was. He's like the ghetto Shakespearean. Absolutely. Just his delivery. He wasn't only Shakespearean, but he was like the best Shakespearean actor to ever recite Shakespeare. The other characters... Oh, speaking of The Wire, I have to just give another week a plug for... my favorite show at the moment, Treme, T-R-E-M-E.
Down in the Treme, just me and my baby.
Have you checked that out, Jay-Z, Treme? It has a lot of Wire characters in it, and was made by, what's his name, Simon?
David Simon.
David Simon. All surrounding kind of one neighborhood in New Orleans. My right. Omar quote, how do?
Yeah.
How do?
That was my IT team in India telling me they need to talk to me, so I got to wrap this up.
And we wanted to talk about Facebook too.
Yeah, we're just talking about the Yemeni thing. You know, I think there is such a huge amount of evidence over the last sort of 50 years of the CIA doing false flag operations and MI6 and the Israeli Secret Service, in particular, it's just a standard MO, false flag operations, that when you see these things happen, particularly if there's some sort of political or propaganda benefit to one of the aforementioned countries, it absolutely makes sense to have the potential of a false flag operation in your analysis of what's going on. But of course, if you listen to the mainstream media or any governments, when they talk about this, talk about the Yemen thing, for example, the only option you hear about is, it was Al-Qaeda. That's the only thing you're going to hear about. No one's going to say, well, Al-Qaeda haven't taken credit for it, which they always do, because that's the point. They haven't taken credit for it, so why do you think it's Al-Qaeda? Well, it has all the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda. Right, right, right. But they don't talk about, well, it might be somebody else, or it might be, a false flag operation, or it might be any number of things. You don't hear any discussion or debate or analysis of all the different potentials. All you're going to hear in the mainstream media is it's Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. And this happened at a really convenient time, right before the U.S. elections. And, the best way to instill faith in any government is to have a potential scare that got stopped. Keep them afraid. One, we're still under attack. Two, well, we stopped it.
Yeah, but I mean, it could also be used by the Republicans in the U.S. to say, well, look, Obama's...
withdrawing troops. Or...
yeah, you know, he's withdrawing troops and we're still under threat and we need to be ramping back up the industrial military complex. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that it could be. And I mean, I don't have any evidence that it's one way or the other, but... you know, we've even been lied to so much in the last decade by successive governments about Saddam's got weapons of mass destruction and so Iraq supporting Al-Qaeda and, you know, one thing after another, that we have to start with the basis that there's a good chance that they're lying to us about these things. You know?
Yeah.
If they can produce, and it should be, the burden of proof should be on our governments to prove beyond reasonable doubt what's actually going on, you know, the evidence that they've got, the data that they've got. But of course they just go, well, national security, we can't show the evidence, you just have to trust us.
Right.
But when they've been lying to you over and over again, to trust governments that continually lie to you is irrational.
Yeah.
But, you know, our populations all believe in baby Jesus too, so they've been taught to be irrational, and so they don't have the force of intellect and will to say, no, you fucking provide the evidence or fuck off. We're not going to support you.
And really, it all boils down to religion. And that's why you and I are so adamant on fighting religious institutions and thought.
Which was the other story I wanted to talk about, which was the Jesus is a cunt t-shirt. Another guy in Brisbane, this is the second one in a couple of years, was arrested for wearing a t-shirt put out by the heavy metal band, British heavy metal band Cradle of Filth, that has a picture of a naked nun masturbating on it, and it has Jesus is a cunt written on the back. Naked nun on the front masturbating. Jesus is a cunt written on the back. This guy got arrested apparently for disturbing the peace, or being a public nuisance is the law. And, I'm fascinated to know more about what aspect of this was the public nuisance. Was it the masturbating naked woman, or was it the fact that it was a nun, or was it the fact that it used the word cunt? Or if he just had cunt written on a t-shirt, would he have been arrested?
I don't think so.
Or was it the Jesus is a cunt? Was it the religious implication that made it a public nuisance? Or was it the pornography, what they would call pornography on it?
I think it was the Jesus and the nun. And
you think it's the religious side?
Well,
of it?
Okay. I think that our society is afraid of sex anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, people are sexophobic. They don't want sex to be talked about. They want it to be in closed doors.
They don't want you doing it on tents on the public beach, in the middle of the day.
They don't want that either. No. They don't want that.
Coming up with something completely random.
Hey, we've done it without a tent on a beach.
Shh. We'll get arrested.
Yeah.
Cigar's done. We finished that quickly tonight. It wasn't very long, wasn't it, Churchill?
No. I have a little bit of a buzz, too. It's so funny that I start with the alcohol as the most dangerous drugs. I'm drinking Champers.
Yeah, because that's the crazy one. People get on Champers, they get fucked up, start street riots.
I get giggly.
Yes, you do.
And it's Melbourne Cup Day, so I thought...
Who cares?
Well, I don't, but...
All right.
I like Champers.
Well, I got technical issues to go take care of. So that's the live show for this week. Thanks to anyone who tuned in live, particularly DWW84 and NZJZ. NZJZ.
I know DWW84. You are the comic book guy. And we met up at the art gallery.
Well, in Gabba, that's what I said to you.
Cheers, man.
David, I think, right? Dave?
Yeah. We totally met up, talked. Yeah. Cool guy.
Yeah,
sorry. I have problems with Twitter names and faces.
And she always thinks that Robert De Niro is Al Pacino. God Hates Figs. Yeah, that was a good story too. We didn't even... I like that. Thanks to anyone who's watching the recording or listening to the audio podcast. Don't forget, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Queensland time, if you want to tune in live and chat to us on the back channel. And I'll give a plug to my new podcast too, the Lotu podcast, if you haven't heard that yet. This is where I talk about my religion for atheists, LOTU, L-O-T-U, which stands for the laws of the universe. Go to wpmu.thepodcastnetwork.com/LOTU. I need to get a better URL for that. Anything else you want to plug?
I'll just end with FTWK.
Oh, yeah, show them your shirt. Have you showed that off? Yeah. FTWK. Yeah. All right, thanks, guys. We're gone. We're out.
Cheers. Bye. Peace. Yeah. Yeah.